What's up, guys? Coming up today on Sports Spectrum, we have Jay Feely, CBS Sports NFL analyst, 14 years as an NFL kicker, played his college ball at Michigan, his son Jace kicking now for the University of Colorado. Jay was on the show back in 2019, so we got him back here 4 years later. There's a lot to talk about, including the first question I asked him, his favorite celebrity encounter. There is so much there just in his one answer on that one. It makes you kind of shake your head. But he also had a trip to Israel earlier this year that we're going to talk about. Really changed his perspective on faith and on Jesus. Talking about parenting a college athlete. Just a lot of good stuff here from Jay Feely. I think you're going to really love this conversation with the longtime NFL kicker. It's coming up in just a moment here on Sports Spectrum. First, want to remind you about our Sports Spectrum magazine. You can go to the sportsspectrum.com website, sportsspectrum.com, and you can subscribe right now to the Sports Spectrum magazine. Our current issue is the fall football issue with Kirk Cousins, Minnesota Vikings quarterback, on the cover. It tells his story of faith and actually talks to his dad, who's a pastor, Don Cousins, and it's in-depth stories, faith-filled, clean content that you will not find anywhere else in the sports world. If you have kids, if you have grandkids, like Jay Feely is going to have soon, Sports Spectrum's magazine is the perfect gift for them because it introduces Jesus in a way and uses sports as the vehicle, as the road map to lead to introducing the gospel using sports. And we just love what we do at Sports Spectrum. We love the magazine, and we would hope that you would subscribe to it over at sportsspectrum.com. When you do, use the podcast 15 code and save 15% off. That code again is podcast 15, and you save 15% off a one-year subscription to the Sports Spectrum magazine. You can subscribe today right now at sportsspectrum.com. Jay Feely, CBS Sports NFL analyst, longtime NFL kicker. Welcome back to Sports Spectrum, buddy. It's good to see you.
Yeah, you and I, we go back a long way now. Way before CBS, back to the ESPN days.
A long ways. You were a kicker. I think you were with the Giants maybe at the time. Does that sound right when you first started with
the Giants
first take?
When we did cold pizza the first time. Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. So the whole New York connection, you could just go right into Manhattan.
Battle and Skip Bayless. That's right.
Oh my gosh. You were embracing debate before anybody else was embracing debate. When you think about those old times with Skip and who was it, Woody? And Jay and
I usually sat in for Woody. Yeah, Jay Crawford was there, and Dana Jacobson. Yeah, exactly. Long time ago.
Yeah, Pete. Oh, I gotta catch up with Pete. He's such a good dude, Pete McConville. It's been so long since those days, but it's pretty cool to see kind of where God's brought you to today, working at CBS, entering your ninth year, and you're in the middle of calling games right now, which is awesome. Your son kicking for Colorado, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But you did mention, so we were on Twitter a few months back, and I just put out a, what's it called, X now, I guess, but I just put out a tweet just for fun saying, hey, who's, you know, your favorite celebrity encounter? And you simply replied, ask me this on the podcast. So let's start with that question first, Jay Feely, asking you who your favorite celebrity encounter was.
Well, you know, I've had a few because I just went and played golf with President Trump and my son last week.
Wow.
And he and I played golf like three times together.
Well, that's a pretty big celebrity encounter, I'd say.
Yeah, I played golf a couple times with Bill Clinton. Okay. And had dinner with him a couple times. And we did some projects down in Haiti together. And then I got to play golf with George W. Bush one time. So getting to play golf with three different presidents was pretty cool.
Yes.
Each time, very unique. My son got to play with him with President Trump earlier this month and before their season started. And he made two birdies to start the round. And President Trump was like buddies with him. Like, okay, I got the right partner because those two were partners. And they kicked our butts. I was paired with their club champ and they kicked our butts. But
that's funny.
You know, the dinner with Clinton was interesting because I had never met him. And James Caan, the late James Caan, and I were playing in a golf tournament, Michael Jordan's golf tournament together.
The actor and, we're talking about, Godfather, all
yes,
that.
Yeah, exactly. And he invited me and my wife to come to dinner with him and his wife after the round. And so I'm like, yeah, that'd be amazing. And I was early in my football career. And so I went back, I told my wife, hey, we're going to go to dinner with James Caan. And And so we were kind of waiting and waiting. And so finally he called me and I'm like, what's the deal? Are we going? He goes, I'm waiting on Bill. And I said, Bill who? And he said, Clinton. And I'm like, we're going to dinner with Bill Clinton too? He's like, yeah. I'm like, all right. Well, at the end of the day, James had to cancel. Something came up and so he canceled. So my wife is like, well, we can't go to dinner with Bill Clinton. I'm like, yeah, we are. Like, I got invited. So I show up. And I'm like, hey, Jay Feely, to have dinner with James Caan and Bill Clinton. They're like, oh, we'll show you right back. And so we walk back to the back of Nobu down at Atlantis. And I walk into this private room, and there's three people sitting in the room. It's Bill Clinton, it's the chief of staff, and Bob Johnson, who's the CEO of BET. And then now we walk in, and they don't know who we are at all. So I'm like, oh, you know, James Caan invited me to come. They're like, oh, all right, come on. So we sit out and start talking. They're like, where's James? I'm like, oh, he had to cancel. Something kind of came up. So we sat there and had dinner for like 3 hours. You know, and it was just fascinating to talk to, you know, the former president and hear his stories. And, you know, people get like kind of caught up in politics and what side you are. And to me, it's like if you get an opportunity to sit down with the president, regardless if he's the party that you like or not, or that you vote for or not, you respect the office and you're tremendously grateful for that opportunity. And so that kind of started a friendship, and it ended up, and he helped us. We were doing a big project down in Haiti after the earthquake, and we had a deaf community. And, you know, if you're a deaf community and there's no electricity, obviously it's dark and you can't communicate, and you're using sign language. And so they came in and they put solar lights in that project, and kind of through that friendship that helped create an opportunity that was a lot safer because it took away a lot of the petty crime that was going on, and that, you know, helped them to live a better life down there. Now it's pretty rough in Haiti right now, and we still do a lot down there, but yeah. I pray for the people down there all the time because of just all the chaos that's going on down there. But that was kind of a cool story.
I mean, yeah, not many people I know in my life have had, you know, dinners with three different presidents or play golf or whatever it is. That's an amazing story. Let me follow up. Do you have their phone numbers? And I'm just curious, the presidents give out phone. I'm guessing you don't, but presidents don't give out phone numbers, right?
No, you have like chief of staff. You have people that you can call. So like my son tells me, hey, I have 3 days off. Let's do something really special. And, you know, he's like, I've always wanted to like play golf with President Trump. And so I'm like, let me try and set it up. And so obviously I text people like, hey, I got these 3 days. If it works out, just tell us where. And we'll come, we'll fly in, we'll play with him. So that's what we end up doing.
Okay. Well, it's good. It's good to have friends in very, very high places, I guess, or connections to friends in high places, right?
Yes, exactly.
That's awesome. Now, you mentioned Jace. He's kicking now for Colorado. What's it been like going through this with your son, you know, compared to, you know, you played in the NFL for 14 years, kicked at Michigan. Yeah. He's kicking for Colorado. Deion Sanders is his coach. What's this been like right now watching him kind of go through his own journey?
It's been a long journey for him. So if you go all the way back to signing day as a senior in high school, he's so excited. He's committed to Oregon. He's going to Oregon. And it's during COVID, so you didn't get to even do the same recruiting trips. It was all virtual, you know, but he loved the trip when he did it. So signing day morning, I get a text from Oregon, and they're like, you know, hey, would your son walk on? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, you guys already offered him, and I turned down all these other schools for him. And anyways, they get, you know, a corner that they didn't think they were going to get. And so he ends up losing his scholarship. And I remember having to walk to him that morning, and he was on the field kicking. And before I could say anything, he's like, Dad, I've been kicking so well. I'm just so glad to have this all over with. And I'm just like crushed. You know, I'm like, dude, I got bad news. And I'm like, you know, Oregon pulled the scholarship. And, you know, he was just heartbroken. He had already announced it. And it started a 2-year journey for him that was really hard. And, you know, a lot of those schools that had offered, you know, they went on to other kickers. And so he ends up having to walk on at Arizona State and doesn't get a whole lot of playing time there the first, you know, 2 years that he was there. And it was really a faith journey for him and, you know, trying to walk alongside him in that process as a dad and as somebody who had done it as well. And, you know, I was out of college for 2 years, not getting any invites into training camp for 2 years. I worked as a financial advisor and really like just saying, all right, God, are you going to open this door or not? And, you know, had to wait for myself. And so we kind of went through that same process and walking alongside him in that and watching him grow in his faith. And, you know, then deciding this year when Herm Edwards and that whole staff gets fired at ASU that, all right, I'm going to go somewhere else and try and get a fresh start. And Dion and I had done games together 6 years ago on Thursday Night Football, and we had gotten to know each other. And this was like Jace's freshman year in football, and Dion was coaching high school football. And so every week, I'd come to the game, and I'd be like, "All right, who you got this week?" And he'd tell me, and he'd ask me about Jace, and we'd talk. And I haven't found this video that he made for Jace, like one of the games I couldn't be there. He felt bad not being at the games his freshman year, and so I asked Dion if he'd make a video for Jace and just kind of encourage him, and I sent it to him. And it's him t saying, "Jace, I'm here with your dad, and we talk about you all the time, and I want you to come play for me in Texas, a kicker who plays linebacker as well." So to come full circle, and they need a kicker after he takes the Colorado job, and Jace is going to transfer, and he ends up at Colorado accepting a scholarship and going to play there, and just watching this 2 year journey kind of come to fruition, and know how I saw God's hand in that, and guiding him along the way, and watching him mature a lot along the way and go through some tough times and disappointments, and as part of our faith journey. It's been special to be a walk alongside him in that, and to see the growth that's happened, and to see, and then he gets to Colorado, Jason, and so excited. I drive him up there, drop him off in January, and he starts his new journey. And right away, he has heart issues. And we had no idea. He's never had heart issues before. And all of a sudden, he's got to have this big heart surgery in March. And they got to go in and do an ablation. And had he not ended up at Colorado with the elevation and working out in elevation, which really kind of like started it, maybe we don't find out that he has that. And then he has a cardiac issue because of that. And so, in a way, it may have saved his life. And so he does the surgery. He only misses like a couple weeks, and he's back out there doing what he loves to do and kicking and competing and trying to help Colorado win some games this year. So watching him kick is a lot harder for me than going out there kicking myself, because
Oh,
I can't do it. So I'm just that nervous dad on the sidelines, hoping that he gets that opportunity and that he comes through. But to be able to walk alongside, when he misses and when he has a tough game or a tough practice or things aren't going the right way, and to be able to like kind of look at his form, tell him what I think he's doing wrong, talk to him mentally about how to handle that and how to move forward, and where your faith plays a big part in that. As he got ready for training camp, I sent him some verses like, just here's what God says about peace and why you can trust in him and how you can go about working as hard as you can. And my son-in-law actually said it to me the other day. He talked about working as if it only depends on you, but trusting as if it only depends on God.
That's good.
And I thought that was really good, and I sent that to him.
It's got to be interesting when your son is going through trials. You're supposed to not go through trials when you're younger. It's supposed to get harder as you get older, like the ages that you and I are at. But when you go through trials when they're younger, I think that really, I mean, the Bible talks about it builds endurance, it builds perseverance, and in many ways, it builds trust towards God. You've seen that, I presume, over these, last few years.
He had a pretty easy high school run. He started as a freshman, made a 50-yard field goal right away as a freshman. Sports Illustrated does a big, thing on it. And so then, he was getting recruited, and things kind of went the way he wanted. It was pretty easy for him in high school. And so to run into his first battle with adversity, he didn't know how to handle it, so it was tough. And he kind of responds like I do in anger, and you got to learn how to walk in faith and how to trust in God, even when those doors are closing and when your dream isn't coming true and you're not getting opportunities. And so that was a 2-year-long process, but I've seen the growth in him. And and I think in a way it helps me as well.
And I read you're going to be a grandpa, which when I saw that, I'm like, how is Jay Feely going to be a grandpa? But my
Oh,
brother's the
my
same
word.
age as you, and he's a grandpa. So I guess it's not out of the realm of possibility to be in your 40s and be a grandfather.
That just blows my mind. I can't believe that either. I feel like I'm still playing. I feel like I just got off the field, even though it's been 9 years. But you know what? I mean, everybody I talk to says being a grandpa is, and being grandparents is the best thing in the world. Being able to be there and just help your kids and watch your daughter mature and watch her and her husband kind of go through, that process and that faith journey as well. And it's just kind of cool to be able to sit back and to watch that, and really to see the fruition of all the work that you put in, and you just kind of watch them start get ready to be parents, and to, because I just remember the day I brought her home, and we were just like, now what do we do? I have no idea how to be a dad.
Well, now you get to give them back, Jay. If you, you get to take the grandkids and then say, okay, it's yours now.
Yes.
Giving it back.
Exactly. I love it.
Have all the fun and then give it back. That's going to be great. This trip in April you were telling me about, you took to Israel. I really want to get into. What was that experience? How did that come about? And, you know, what was that experience like going to the Holy Land? It must have been incredible.
It was on my bucket list. So something I've always wanted to do was to go to Israel. Was not planned this year at all. In fact, I got a call from a friend of mine, and he works with a group, CUFI, which is Christians United for Israel. And they take groups over and they do different, you know, trips to Israel and help people to understand what's going on in Israel and why Christians should care about that and support what's going on in Israel. And they called me up about 2 weeks before the trip and just said, hey, we got an opening. You know, would you like to go on this trip? It's kind of a group of NFL players as well as a group of special forces guys. And, you know, I thought about it and my wife was invited too, and she couldn't go. Our parents were with us. And so I knew it was going to be a trip that would just be me. And, you know, I prayed about it a lot, and she was really the one who encouraged me, you know, felt really strongly that I should go, even though it was 2 weeks, you know, just getting on a plane and going, literally, I'm talking like the day before the trip, I'm texting them like, hey, what hotel am I even staying at when I get to Poland first? Because we went to Poland for a few days first. And and so I didn't really know what to expect. And it was one of the greatest trips of my life.
Wow.
We started in Poland and, you know, we went to Auschwitz and we went to Krakow in the ghetto there and the ghetto in Warsaw. And it was absolutely heartbreaking. Like I physically was ill for a couple of days, just because you see it firsthand, you've read about it, you've heard about the Holocaust, but to go into, to see it and to go into walking and to see hair for 100 yards of people that they took when they, you know, killed them and took their hair because they were going to use it to sell, you know, and to put into pillows. I mean, it's just so stark and so, it's just such a gut punch. So, and then we were there, and then we took a group of 100 Ukrainian Jewish refugees that from the war in Ukraine had to leave, and they were taking them and bringing them to Israel to move and to live and to sit down with an 86-year-old couple, which we did, who had lost their home in World War II when Germany had invaded Ukraine and they had to go to Russia. And then now they lost their home again. I just sat there and looked at him at 86 years old and couldn't imagine losing everything I had and having to move to a country that I don't know anything about at 86 years old and how hard that would be, you know, and how we have no idea here in the United States. And so, but to be a part of that process and to get on that plane and to fly with them and to see the joy, that was really cool. And then we're in Israel and now we're walking where Jesus walked and we're going everywhere and the Bible is coming to life right in front of us. You know, and you walk into the Garden of Gethsemane and you understand now why they stopped there even, you know, because Jewish law said, you know, you can't go from one city to the next city at Passover. And so they're walking down the hill and obviously they can't continue to go because it's going to be sundown. So they have to stop. And the Garden of Gethsemane is right in between, you know, those two cities where they were walking to. And so that's why they stopped there, you know, and to see trees that are like some of the same trees that existed then, you know, and just bring it to life in front of you is amazing. There's something that they haven't opened yet that we got to do. And because we were with the government of Israel, they took us everywhere. But if you go to the Pool of Siloam where Jesus did his second miracle, and there's a road that goes right from that pool directly up into the Temple Mount. And they've recently found that road. It's exactly the way it was 2,000 years ago. They're excavating the whole thing right now. And we walked on that road. And no one has walked on that road in 2,000 years. And literally, they're like, and this was, you know, we had, our guides were Jewish guides, and they were unbelievable. But they're literally like, there's no doubt Jesus walked on this road because everyone would have walked into the pool, and you got to go once a year. You got to pay your shekel. And they would have cleansed themselves in the pool. And then they would have walked this 2 miles up this road into the Temple Mount. And that's, and then here's where probably, you know, the money changers were, and you could see everything that's built that existed, you know, because in Israel, like when they destroyed it, like in 75 AD, when they destroy the city, it's just ash and soot. And then they build on top and build on top. And that's what happens. And so when you excavate, you find everything the way it was. You know, so to walk on that path and to see like oh, this is where, you know, the Jewish people hid under the road, and here's the holes that they destroyed because, you know, they were getting killed by the Romans when they're destroying, you know, the whole city in 75 AD. It's just fascinating.
Wow.
And it's a faith journey that you can only experience.
Yeah.
And it brings everything to life. And then when I went and touched the wall, and I'm not one of those guys who like has these crazy things happen or thinks, you know, like, I don't buy it. I think most of that, you know, whatever, if somebody says it, okay. But that hasn't been my experiences. And then I touched the wall for the first time. I stand there, you go in, and I touch the wall, and it's literally everything in my body is shaking. And there was like six of us who said the exact same thing when we got back on the bus. You know, and so those kind of experiences that, you know, are things I've never had in my life, and they brought everything to reality. And it was very much, the whole thing was a faith journey for me. So it was an educational journey. I mean, to walk places and to see things that I didn't know about, you know, like I didn't know anything about Caesarea that King Herod built, you know, on the Mediterranean. I didn't know anything about Masada and what King Herod built on the top of the mountain, and to go up there and to walk that and to see that. And then of course I'm with all these special forces guys. So they're like, no, we're jogging it. We're running the whole thing. You know, we are not taking, you know, the shuttle that takes you up to the top. And so I'm like, well, all right, well, I got to keep up with these guys. You know, I'm an old ex-athlete. So I ran and we did the whole thing, and we ran a couple miles and did all that. And I couldn't walk for like the next 3 days with my calves and my quads. But it was pretty funny and pretty amazing at the same time.
So you were with other NFL guys, you said too, right? Other NFL players that went?
Yeah, Sean Alexander was there, which was really cool to be with him. Nick Lowry was there, a couple other guys, and then these special forces guys, which, you know, was amazing to see with them. And, you know, we went everywhere. We went to the West Bank. We went to the Gaza Strip. We went up to the Syrian border. We went up and saw where Hezbollah was. And so now you understand the geopolitics that exist, which I never really understood, you know, and you understand like how small the country of Israel is, and how, you know, there's all these different people, you know, up north with Hezbollah on the East Coast with the West Bank, and on the South with the Gaza Strip, and why it's so precarious there. You know, and there was, you know, while we were there, there was some suicide bombers, and there was, you know, some bombs that were sent into the country. And then as soon as I left was when all the kind of the stuff happened with, you know, about 2,000 bombs, and they had showed us everything. And so, you know, you really start to understand everything a lot better, and then go back in history and read about it a lot more because you've been there and you've walked it.
Wow. That's Jay Feely talking here on Sports Spectrum from CBS Sports. You're in your ninth year at CBS Sports, which is kind of crazy when you think about this journey that you've been on. But you were kind of preparing. I mean, like we talked about, you and I met because you were doing kind of guest work on First Take back in the day on ESPN when I was working on that show. And now you're entering year nine. Does it feel like you've been doing this long?
No, not at all. You know, I mean, it'd be crazy this year at CBS. We have the Super Bowl, and so I'll get to be on the sideline and do the Super Bowl for the third time, which just kind of blows me away.
Yeah.
You know, and to be able to get to do games is such a privilege for me, you know, to do games as a kicker, you know, which, you know, Pat Summerall's only other kicker that has done games, is an honor, and I take it seriously, and I try to study as hard as I can, and you know, try to honor God through, you know, what I do and the job that I do. And honestly, getting to do like a podcast like yours because you're calling games is, you know, is pretty special. So I appreciate it. I thank you for what you're doing. And I know you took a leap of faith as well when you left ESPN and you said, okay, God, I'm going to trust you and I'm going to do something here for you. But, you know, you got to provide for your family as well. So that always impressed me. It always impressed me.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I always am cheering you on as well. One of the things that I really admire about you is you're not afraid to speak up on issues, certainly issues of faith, which I think if we're followers of Christ and we're going to put that out there, then we are called to proclaim the name of Jesus, right? Like there's that's to me, that's a no-brainer. It always blows my mind when people have said, and I've talked to a lot of athletes, some of them off the record, who have said, listen, I love Jesus, but if I put this out there, it might, you know, affect, you know, the bottom line, or it might affect my brand, or it might have, you know, offend my company that I work with. I've always appreciated that you there's a way to do it, I think, too, that you've figured out, I think, in terms of how to be outspoken about your faith, but other things too.
I think I've learned and grown
Yeah.
and through that process, because I do think there's a way to do it where you're doing it with love and you're doing it not gently because you're being honest, but you're not doing it abrasively, you know? And I guess if we think about Christ, like he did that as well. And he reached out across the spectrum to, you know, every different dynamic of people, you know, and whether they agreed with him or not, like he was going to be honest with them, but he did it in a loving, kind way.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's what I've learned is that you can be honest and you can talk about your faith and you can do it in a way, that doesn't push people away, that's not abrasive. And I think when I was probably younger, I was so filled with passion and just like, no, I'm right. And I'm gonna prove to you why I'm right. And so it was abrasive and it was combative. And I don't think you always have to be combative. And I think you can stand up for your faith and stand up for your beliefs, even politics, whatever, without having to be combative. Because what that does, it just pushes people away and they don't listen to you. Then it just becomes an argument. Whereas, you know, if you're talking about faith and you want somebody to know why you believe in Jesus and, you know, why they could trust in him, being combative isn't going to, you know, even if you win the argument, you're not going to help convince them that they should look at the validity of what Jesus said.
And yet it's so easy to do that or portray that you're doing that when you go on a social media site or go on Twitter or something and you're like, oh,
yeah,
it's so easy to just jump back with whatever you know is
right
truth, right?
And nuance is lost on Twitter, there's no doubt.
Yeah.
You know, nuance and sense of humor, any of that just doesn't come across. And so you know, it's hard to do on that platform because you get one tweet, you may do 10 of them, and it's the full concept of what you're saying, but they're going to take one tweet and that's the one they're going to respond to.
So where you are today, when you think about the Lord and this trip in Israel, I have to imagine that just changes your life in a way that's so mind-blowing in terms of the relationship with Jesus. But where he's got you now, like what's the lesson or what's God showing you and teaching you right now?
Humility. I think that's probably, you know, the biggest lesson, you know, that I've been going through and learned. And you know, I think when you're married, my wife and I just had our 25th anniversary.
Yeah, happy anniversary. That's awesome.
Yes, which is special. But I will say, like, marriage isn't easy. And we have our ups and downs. And, you know, I'm certainly not in any way perfect as a husband. I've made a lot of mistakes. And trying to figure out how to be a godly husband and a godly father, and now I'm going to be a godly grandfather, and try to balance that with work and what you're trying to do. And, you know, I think as we get older and we make mistakes and we are forgiven for those mistakes and you try to then not make those mistakes again, I think you learn a lot of humility that when you're younger, you don't have. And I think that's kind of the season that I'm in right now. And you know, it softens you and it helps give you perspective. It helps gives you understanding about other people and the mistakes that they made. I know you and I have talked about just, you know, our own fathers and going through life, you know, with them and the mistakes that they made. It's given me more patience and more understanding, more love with my dad, and just different people in my life who, you know, who we've gone through different issues with.
Why is it so hard to exude this to other people outside of the realm of our inner circle, but when it comes to our own family members, let's say somebody who's not saved or somebody who's gone through addiction like my dad or your situation with your father, why is that harder to do? Why?
It's true. Because you can forgive somebody at work. Okay, hey, you messed up. You said something. Hey, no big deal. Let's move forward. But, you know, when those people are in your own home or when they're, you know, relationships, it's something you hold on to for 20 years, you know, 30 years. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know the answer.
Or too close to it. I think that's why. I think that's got to be the reason why. All right, let's finish out with some fun. A couple questions here that I think will be fun for you. What's been your favorite game that you've had the chance? You said two Super Bowls, so maybe that's one of them. But that you've had a chance to be a part of a broadcast team with, and maybe you were even on the call. So it might be a regular season game that a lot of people aren't thinking about that you've been able to call. What's been your favorite one?
I'm smiling because I know exactly what it is.
Okay.
Because it's the only game that I've been at working, and I was like a fan on the sidelines. Like, I was pushing people around. I was screaming, yelling. because it was the Kansas City Chiefs against the Buffalo Bills, that unbelievable playoff game a couple of years ago.
My goodness.
Where the last, you know, 5 minutes of that game is the greatest football I've ever seen in my life. And you know, comeback after comeback after comeback, no way it happens. Oh my, I cannot believe they just made that play, you know, touchdown, comeback. Like, it was just spectacular football at the highest level. You don't want either team to lose. And they'll literally, like, when they're making plays, I'm hugging random people. I'm jumping up and down. And I'm literally on the call. Like, I'm, you know, I'm doing the game. And it was just one of the most fun atmospheres I've ever been in. Even though I wasn't playing, I'm just watching it. And, you know, those two teams were playing at such a high level. You know, if Buffalo wins that game, I think they win the Super Bowl.
I would agree.
You know, and they're 15 seconds away from winning that game, and they can't keep Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Harrison Butker from getting into field goal range and knocking that down. And then as soon as you go to the overtime, you're like, done. The Bills are done. The Chiefs are winning this game. Like, it was just unbelievable. And so I had so much fun doing that, and I'll never forget being on the sideline for that game.
It's the most loud I think I've been as a fan watching a game that does not involve my team.
Right.
I've been a Cowboys fan since I was a kid, but not involving the Cowboys in maybe forever, because I could not believe, I was screaming when the Bills scored that touchdown with 15 seconds left. Like, oh my gosh, they just did it. And of course, in 99.9% of the games, that's it. The game is over. But not when you have Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce. And then when they came down, my wife got mad because she's a Titans fan, and she can't stand the Chiefs because they've won so much. She's like, ah, Mahomie, he's doing it. She calls him Mahomes.
Mahomie.
She goes, ah, Mahomie, he's going to do it. I can't believe this. Like, she was genuinely invested in a game that neither of us had a team we were rooting for or against.
Yeah.
It was, it's the most incredible game I've watched.
Jason, here's an interesting story about that game. So, you know, you come to the end of the game, and obviously if it's a game-winning kick and I'm in that position on the sidelines, they're going to try to get to me.
Yes.
But because the clock was running, everything's going, they can't get to me, right? Because Jim's talking, he's setting up, Tony's got to say what he's got to say. But, like, I knew the play before where they were going to go with the ball, because as they get set and they come up to the line, Harrison Butker is, like, 10 percentage points better that year on the left hash than he was on the right hash. So you figure, okay, they're going to throw the ball. It's got to be quick because they only have, like, 6 seconds, and they got to get it, spike it. And so Kelce lines up to the left in the slot. I'm like, they're going to Kelce right here. Like, that's exactly where they're going. Well, you know, which isn't, I mean, everybody probably was thinking they're going to Kelce, but when he lines up on the left, that's where they want the ball to go. And then obviously they hit it, get it down, and he comes in, and Harrison Butker drains that kick. And, you know, Harrison Butker is such a unique guy too. I mean, I just love watching him, the faith that he has.
Yes.
He's not shy about it. I was watching him last year, right before he made the game winner in the AFC Championship. He's got a measuring stick out on the sidelines, a tape ruler. The whole entire game, he's measuring his steps. I mean, here's a guy who's been a Pro Bowler, one of the best kickers in the NFL his entire career, and he's measuring his steps. And I took a picture and sent it to my son because I was like, it's a great lesson for, like, understanding. Like, even when you become one of the best in the world, you know, he's one of the two or three best in the world at what he does. You have to still focus on the details of what you're doing while you're doing it to be great at what you're doing. To get the result you want, you got to keep focusing on those details. And he did that throughout that game. And then, sure enough, he gets a game winner at the end of that game to send him the Super Bowl. You know, and I thought that was such a great lesson to learn.
Well, it's got to be, I don't want to say agonizing for you, because you're going from being in the booth, as we're watching every Sunday, you're calling games as an analyst in the booth, right?
Yeah.
And then in the playoffs, they bring Jay Feely and make him a sideline reporter, a kicker analyst. I don't even know what the exact terminology is.
Yeah.
But you're a sideline reporter, in essence, to be able to provide commentary when it comes to field goals and punts and things like that that have to do with the kicking game.
Special teams,
that's right. And you're there, and you probably have nugget upon nugget, and they don't
so
come
much
to you, and you're like, all right, I guess that goes in the back pocket for another time. That has to have happened multiple times to you.
Yeah, I have to humble myself when I go do that role, you know, for the playoffs and understand, like, what my position is when I'm doing that. And the other thing is, like, you have, like, 5 seconds because Jim's going to throw it down to you, but I can't bleed over the play. And it's usually the clock is running, it's going down. So you're talking, but you're watching the play and making sure, like, okay, if they're taking a little longer, I can keep talking a little bit more, but I got to throw back to Jim so he can actually set this play up. So this is kind of the dynamics of what you're doing, but it's fun. It's fun. You know, Jim's one of my favorite people. Like, he's been so good to me at CBS and such a kind friend to me since I got there, and had so many cool moments with him that I'm really appreciative of the opportunity to kind of to do those games with him.
100%, and we'll probably be out there. It's still early, but we've booked some of the reservations already for the Sports Spectrum trip to Las Vegas. So hopefully we'll catch up in person, Jay Feely, and be able to maybe have a meal or something or say hello. So that'd be fun.
I'd love it
as we prepare for the Super Bowl. All right, my last question. I had this as kind of a throwaway, but I figured you've played with a lot of legendary players in your journey. You played, you know, even in college, you know, your Brady's team. He's your holder, by the way. I saw Tom Brady was holding for Jay Feely.
I got a picture on my wall here of him holding for me.
It's just mind-boggling to me that the greatest quarterback of all time was holding for kicks, you know, at Michigan. But he was. So you play with a lot of legends. Who's the most impressive player that you've been a teammate of? Like, and it could be just that one year. It might not be somebody who's going to the Hall of Fame or whatever. But maybe just the one season you were there with them. And a couple guys come to my mind, but I'll let you answer that you've seen in your journey.
Athletically, the most impressive player is Michael Vick. And, you know, watching him, especially a young Michael Vick in his second year, and he ran all over the league. And and then in his fourth year as well, and we lost in the NFC Championship that year to the Eagles. But, you know, he was just such a better athlete than everyone else on the field. And when you're playing with the greatest athletes in the world, And one guy is just that much higher than everyone else and seemingly can just run around and do whatever he wants. You know, it was a treat. It was one of those guys where you're just on the sidelines. I imagine if you were played with Barry Sanders at the, you know, and the Lions in that day, like you would feel that way about Barry watching him, you know, how no one could tackle him because nobody could catch Mike. And his speed was just, when he sprinted, he, you know, he would take the fastest DBs and they would collide into each other. Because they would take a bad angle and he would split him right down like he did against Minnesota, run for a touchdown in overtime. And, you know, there was just many, many times where you're just, you know, like dumbfounded on the sidelines at the things he did. And in college, it was Charles Woodson, you know, and Charles was just amazing to watch play both sides of the ball. You know, the best corner in college football, he would lock the receiver down. You put him on whoever it was. We could shift coverage away from him, slide the safeties away from him because they didn't worry because he was going to lock them down. Then he'd flip over on the other side of the ball, even though he didn't play receiver, you know, all the way through college and come in and be one of our most dynamic receivers on that side of the ball. And then, when it's important, I'll just run back and catch a few punts and return for touchdowns against Ohio State and lock up the national championship. You know what I mean? Yeah. He was just really special athletically. And, you know, I still talk to Charles a lot and get to see him. And, you know, what's cool about Charles is that he's taken everything that he accomplished on the field, winning a Heisman, winning a Super Bowl, becoming the Hall of Fame, and he's used it to have an impact on people's lives off the field. So I love to see the growth in him as a person as well. And so that's really cool to see to this day.
And mind you, let me just throw a couple other names out of people you played with. You know, obviously Larry Fitzgerald in Arizona, Brett Favre for that one year with the Jets, Jason Taylor. I mean, some pretty incredible players that you've had there.
And Brady, the greatest of
course.
All time.
We mentioned him earlier, but yes, you had him early. You had him early on his journey.
It's been fun. I mean, Eli Manning as well. You know, there's been a lot of different guys that I got the privilege to play with and to play alongside and to watch and to become friends. Like, I mean, you look at a guy like Larry Fitzgerald, consummate pro, the best teammate I ever had, you know, always caring about everybody, never an ego at all, even though he's one of the greatest of all time. Like I would put him top five wide receivers of all time. And he had a couple of good years with Kurt Warner, but he never really had a quarterback. You know, he played for like 25 different quarterbacks. So it's pretty special to see some of those guys.
Well, that's good. I we're going to be watching you on Sundays, Jay Feely. We're going to be watching you at the Super Bowl and then the playoffs, hopefully, God willing. But we'll be cheering you on. And let's make sure we watch Colorado throughout the rest of this year, too, and look for Jace Feely as he does his thing, for the Bucs and Deion Sanders.
When he gets that game winner and he's sitting there and I'm sitting in the stands, you know, dying, hoping that he makes it. Understanding what my family felt when I was playing.
I'm just guessing, by the way, your flight scheduled, and I know you're kind of into it already, but that flight schedule is going to be quite quite the interesting one for Jay Feely as you try to navigate Saturdays and Sundays this year.
I've been begging CBS to put me on Denver Bronco games. Yeah. If I can be there on Sunday to do the Bronco game, be able to slide up to Boulder on Saturday and watch him, that's the perfect setup.
100%. Well, listen, it's been great to catch up again and have you back on the show. Like I said, hopefully we get to see you out in Vegas. But either way, it's been great talking with you, buddy. Thanks for coming back on.
Jason, an honor and privilege, bud. Thanks a lot.
And many thanks to Jay Feely for joining us here today on Sports Spectrum. You can watch him on Sundays calling NFL games for CBS Sports and hopefully, God willing, an opportunity through the playoffs and into the Super Bowl this year in Las Vegas in February of 2024. Hopefully Sports Spectrum is going to be there as well. We're hoping so. We got some of our reservations already made, so we're excited about that. But what a conversation that was with Jay. He's a smart guy. He's been through a lot. He's going through quite the interesting journey right now, watching his son kick at Colorado. So if you're watching college football on Saturday, and the Colorado Buffaloes are playing, look for Jace Feely as the kicker, and Deion Sanders obviously coaching that team. So there'll be a lot of eyeballs on Colorado football this year. But Jay Feely, and the stories, by the way, that he told about meeting the presidents, you know, having dinner with Bill Clinton, playing golf with Clinton and Bush and Trump. It's just crazy, the opportunities that he's had. And we go way back, as he mentioned at the top. I met Jay probably in 2007, 2008, when he was working, kind of filling in on ESPN First Take, and he would come up to Bristol, Connecticut, and debate Skip Bayless and be on First Take with Jay Crawford and Dana Jacobson. Shout out to Pete McConville, as we gave in the top of the podcast. Pete was the producer and one of my favorite people at ESPN. So lots of, it's been an interesting journey. We'll just say, thinking about, 16 years ago, all the way to where Jay Feely is now, a multiple Emmy winner, and lots of fun talking to the longtime NFL kicker here on Sports Spectrum. We appreciate you guys for tuning in to today's show. As always, we want to recommend that you subscribe and follow this podcast on whatever app you're listening. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, if you would leave a review, leave a 5-star rating and a review, just let people know that you enjoyed this conversation or that you enjoyed Sports Spectrum. That just helps get the word out to those looking for a podcast of our type. You know, there's not a lot of sports and faith content out there. That's why we really take a lot of pride in the work that we're trying to do and make sure it's excellent, but make sure it's gospel-centered and pointing people to Christ. That's our goal with pretty much every conversation and anything that we do with Sports Spectrum. So if you could be an ambassador and an advocate for our brand by just telling people about Sports Spectrum, maybe somebody will come to know Jesus because of either this podcast or anything that we're doing. If it's one person, it was worth it. And your support in that means so much. So we thank you for tuning in. We love you guys, and we hope you have a great rest of your day. And we will see you next time right here on Sports Spectrum.